the borders, Vermonters, come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle at Grey Wolf and Fox.
Welcome to Radio Free Canada. I'm your host, Kevin Hannett, with Ryan Gable back on December 11th. And that is the Ballad of the Green Mountain Boys that's going out to all of you patriots out there on any side of the border. And remembering that, we start off with a quote from Thomas Paine: the highest duty of a patriot is to protect his country from its government. And that's a big part of the theme today, where we're going to be looking at the case of a crusading attorney general in Pennsylvania who was fired and jailed after she stumbled across a global child-killing network, after she had successfully prosecuted state attorneys and Catholic officials who were trafficking in children. That woman was Kathleen Kane, and her fate today is indicative of anyone, any honest official in the system who discovers and pursues crimes against children in their own backyard that involve the Roman Catholic Church. We're going to be looking at that by discussing the whole matter with a Pennsylvania activist, a longtime activist, Alana Hartsock, who is our guest today. And Ryan, welcome. Welcome
back.
Hey
there, Kevin.
Well, you know, I wanted to flag two dates before we bring Alana on. Two dates in December. Actually, 2 days ago, December 9th, was the day in Canada in 1837 when patriots, including my great-great-great-grandfather Philip, picked up their rifles and tried to overthrow the Crown authority. And their 1776 was defeated, and we've been living under the legacy of that for many years, including the genocidal legacy. But we always mark December 9th as the Patriots' Day in both English and French Canada. And that's one of the dates. The other one, of course, is going to be a topic of upcoming shows. December 24th is the 70th anniversary of the murder of Maisie Shaw, a little Indian girl at the Puerto Bernie United Church Indian Residential School who was kicked to her death by Principal Alfred Caldwell that Christmas Eve, 1946. Her story, as witnessed by Harriet Nahanni, was the first story that came out about the murder of a child in these death camps called Indian Residential Schools. And on December 25th, which is 2 weeks today, we're going to be talking that on the air because our groups in various parts of Canada will be picketing and even occupying United Churches in memory of Maisie Shaw. So I wanted to flag those two dates, Ryan. Any thoughts or comments before we get to Alana?
Yeah, just an initial thought on the story about the woman. I believe her name was Kathleen, correct?
Kathleen Kane, yep.
Yeah, and Kathleen Kane. So that's a story that has not gotten very much publicity whatsoever in both mainstream or alternative media. Of course, following these types of stories, often I try to stay up to date on any type of breaking news relating to this subject. And what I've been seeing in both mainstream and alternative news is a focus, what I've called a psychological operation or a PSYOP, which often is conducted by governments or intelligence agencies to direct people's attention away from credible stories such as this and to focus the attention of the public on stories whether you're in America, Canada, or anywhere else around the world. Many people have probably heard about something called Pizzagate, which I believe is a psychological operation meant to deter focus on other stories, such as this case of Kathleen, which is backed up by far more evidence and credibility rather than just a couple of people on Twitter or on Facebook sharing
right.
posts that they've made up themselves. So that's just very key to recognize.
Yes, Ron, that's a very important point because, you know, of course, we found the same thing in the work we do. We bring out the hard evidence and the testimonies, and suddenly the Internet is flooded with all of these allegations that can't be substantiated, as if to mix up what lawyers call creating a paper trail, where you can't distinguish the real
yes.
evidence from the fake. And certainly that's going on with Kathleen Kane. What's interesting about her, and we'll talk about this with Alana in just a minute when I bring her on, but Kathleen Kane not only discovered that prosecutors in Pennsylvania and church officials were all involved in child porn, in trafficking children, and so on. But there was a secret archive operated by Bishops Hogan and Adamic in Pennsylvania that confirmed the existence of this Vatican policy of crimen solicitanus, where any evidence of a child being raped by a priest is to be buried and locked away by the local bishop. Now, the amazing thing about Kathleen Kane is she named crimen solicitanus in the case against these Catholic officials. And she was also looking into the cover-up around the Sandusky trial, Jerry Sandusky, and how the very prosecutors who she had taken down were involved in covering up the Sandusky case. And so this has a lot of repercussions, which we're going to get into, but that's a very important point that you brought out.
Yeah, no doubt. And if you investigate, whether it's Sandusky or Jeffrey Epstein, you find a connection to a past president such as Bill Clinton, you find a connection to the royal family, Prince Charles, Jimmy Savile in the UK, and so many others. It's a big network, and if you begin to connect the dots, you see that there's much more to it than isolated news cases.
Absolutely. Anyway, just on that, too, I wanted to flag to people, new listeners, our websites where you can follow the whole history of our campaign for over 20 years is the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State. That's ITCCS.org. And also murderbydecree.com. One of the four books we produced this year, and before the end, I'm going to plug our fourth book, a kind of comic thing I wrote called The History of White People in Canada, which will be out this week. But anyway, that's a very important background for folks. ITCCS.org, murderbydecree.com. We're really looking at a global child-killing network that's been around for centuries. And this Kathleen Kane case is yet another example of it, really, when you pull back all the different layers.
Yeah, and the more often we see disinformation through social media or through main or alternative forms of media, that typically means the more and more that it comes out that there has been some type of relevant information that has been released. And as you said, there's an attempt to muddy the waters, per se, so that we don't focus on the attention, focus our attention, rather, on subjects that are pertinent forms of evidence and instead focus on the subjects or focus on the so-called evidence that's purely speculation as opposed to testimony, documentation like crimen solicitanus or other factors that are similar.
Exactly. And that crimen solicitanus document, again, to flag to people, it's something the mainstream press will never talk about, but it's really the standard, it's the policy document telling every Catholic in the world that when children are raped, it's to be covered up, and the local bishop is to conceal it. In other words, these guys going on trial are just the local flunkies enacting a policy coming right from the Pope. And that's...
It comes directly from the Pope. That's right, the office of the highest pontifical secrecy.
And you can find that...
Of course, why you...
Sorry, you can find that document right online, murderbydecree.com. We have it listed there. Sorry, Ryan. Alana is now on the air with us. Hello, Alana.
Hello, Kevin.
Hi, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Do you want to say to folks a little bit of your background and what you know of the whole Kathleen Kane case?
Well, okay. My background is I've been an economic justice advocate with a very strong focus on land tenure, justice in land, and the problem of resource and land grabbing, and how we can essentially have a public finance system that collects the surplus profits, the land rent, land value tax, instead of the putting taxes on labor and production. So that's also been a conspiracy called
right.
That's been repressed that should be known about. And then I did run for Congress as a Green Party candidate in 2001 and in 2014 as the Democratic Party congressional candidate for Pennsylvania District 9. So I've been doing the best I can against this, as we all have, against this corrupt world.
And, of course, you're a Pennsylvania resident, and this
whole
case...
Yes, I'm in South Central Pennsylvania in Franklin County.
Okay. And now, Kathleen Kane was the first female attorney general and the first Democrat elected to that post. Is that right?
Exactly, since they allowed to be an elective position in 1980. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, go ahead. You talk.
Well, she campaigned on a promise to investigate the former governor Tom Corbett's handling of the state investigation into the pedophilia allegations against the former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky. And probably many listeners will be aware of that, Penn State and Jerry Sandusky. And in the course of her looking into that, she came across the fact that dozens of Pennsylvania public officials, many very high level, had been exchanging hundreds of pornographic, racist, and misogynist emails. She was getting them from the years 2008 to 2012. So essentially she became a whistleblower about this case. Before she entered into the attorney general work, though, she was already prosecuting successfully pedophiles. Pedophiles from mostly northeastern Pennsylvania, I think it was, and dozens, she was having dozens of people imprisoned, and she was, had gotten quite good at that. I think she's a mother of two boys. I think she comes at this from a great concern to protect children.
Right.
And one of the main things the Attorney General of Pennsylvania is supposed to do, and you'll see it on their website, is to protect children. So clearly following that mandate. But in pursuing this issue as a primary focus, all these horrific, very, very hard pornographic emails were she uncovered. And so once she started talking about it, a number of public officials resigned. One high-level public official who was court-ordered to stop practicing till he was investigated, that was October 20, 2014, it really came out about Seamus McCaffrey, a Pennsylvania Supreme Court justice in this porn gate, and he resigned almost immediately. 1 week later, he resigned, so it couldn't really be thoroughly investigated. But he was able to keep all of his pensions and retirement benefits, were well over $100,000 a year. And then in looking at his bio, I came across the fact that he's 33-degree Mason.
Mm-hmm.
So following some of these secret orders, and certainly there's a lot of good people in who are Masons who aren't aware of what's happening at that top level, but that 33-degree level seems to be the level where some of this elite, very sordid, satanic, often pedophile activity happens. Is that
exactly
what you've become aware of, Kevin?
Absolutely. And I remember when I was in Pennsylvania earlier, I believe it was in March and April of this year, and you were, we were sitting down talking about all this. What I found really interesting was that her office, for the first time, was referring to the Vatican policy of crimen solicitanis. And
right.
In fact, I remember the article, the Tribune Democrat wrote when they interviewed me. In the same article, the prosecutor admitted that they had looked at canon law, and in other words, the policy telling these bishops that they have to cover up, create a secret archive of all the information on these child-raping priests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that's significant. You know, once you're naming Rome, you're going to the source of this stuff, and you're sending off a lot of alarm bells.
Absolutely. So there's several paths into this corruption at highest levels. And you've really been on the path of looking into the Catholic Church, and then the Masonic path at that high level is another one. So it seems to me there's several ways into this kind of matrix.
Yep.
So the fact that she had her prosecutor very well aware of crimen solicitanis certainly would have set off the alarms, because as this thing proceeded, she made a lot of enemies. And one of the enemies was the guy who was a former prosecutor in the Sandusky case under Governor Corbett. Let me see.
Was that Frank Fina? I know there was a few people in her office who she riled up.
Fina, exactly. That was Frank Fina.
F-I-N-A.
Yeah. Yeah. So a real big battle started with them, because she dropped one of his cases that he'd been pursuing because she thought it was kind of not really a legitimate case. So he got very angry at that. And then she made a misstep. She brought out some information from a grand jury, or enabled that information to come out, or requested somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was picked up by the Philadelphia Inquiry. Now, this kind of thing normally wouldn't be a really big deal, these grand juries, leaking a little bit from a grand jury.
Yeah.
But since she already had all these enemies, oh, my gosh, they were really ready, really, really to nail her.
It seems like a relatively minor.
Huh?
Yeah, it seems like a relatively minor thing.
It is a relatively minor thing. I mean, a slap on the wrist type of thing is what you might normally get.
Right.
Or something, not a big deal, not 8 to 12 years, which is what she got in October, prison.
And Ryan, jump in at any point if you have any comments or questions. Right. But
Sure. I'm just sitting back listening at the moment, but I will.
Okay. Tell us about what happened to her. How was she? I know she was forced to resign, but then she was charged and brought to trial and all that?
Yeah, her trial was I think it was October 24th. Now, she's out on bail of $75,000 cash while it's being repealed. you know, the mm-hmm. but she was in the courtroom very distraught, begging that they just give her house arrest, that please don't rip me away from my boys, her 14 and 15 year old. Her 15-year-old was even there on testifying that, please don't take my mother away. She's my rock. And the 14-year-old was too upset he couldn't even go into the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So she's a fairly recently divorced single mom now and facing this kind of, I call it a witch hunt. I mean, right. It's just when a strong woman, it could have been a man at this point, but in this case it was a woman who stands on the truth. She's a truth seeker and a whistleblower in a high position. They're going to find every reason to shame her, destroy
make
her
an
reputation.
Example of her.
Tom?
Make an example
away
of
her.
Take
away the law license 2 years ago, and she still, the governor said that she was still able to be attorney general without a law license, so she continued. And that's part of when the Altoona case of the Altoona Archdiocese, all the pedophile priests came up, that was still under her jurisdiction as AT.
Well, that's right, and that's when the information came out about the secret archives that this Bishop Hogan and Adamic had operated and how it was a Vatican policy to do that. And I also found it interesting that some of the guys she had named, like this Frank Fina, they had been involved as well in, do you remember the William Lynn case in Philadelphia, where he was a Monsignor, the highest church official ever to be named as having covered up child abuse and destroying records of child rape, William Lynn. And during his trial, once again, the prosecutor was blocking any evidence that might have linked Rome. This Cardinal Bellavacqua, who was going to testify that,
yes,
in fact, there was a Rome involvement in the cover-up of these child abuses, he died conveniently. He was summoned into court, and then he died.
Mm-hmm.
It
was an they did an autopsy like a few hours after he died at 11:30 p.m.
Right. And
can you imagine that? No, I don't mean they did an autopsy. I mean they drained his blood.
they didn't do an autopsy with this cardinal.
They didn't do the autopsy. They prepared him for death, for the mortuary.
I mean, the thing is, Alana, it reads like a mobster novel. I mean, for example, there was a district attorney, Ray Grycar, who had been involved in dropping charges against some of the Sandusky people. Then he got a guilty conscience, and he said he was going to go public with the whole Sandusky cover-up. He vanishes. His body is found in the Susquehanna River with his laptop missing. Right.
Right.
So, I mean,
and then they found the laptop, but without the hard drive, so without
right.
any evidence. Yeah, and that happened right before he was going to come out with all the information. Yeah.
Elena,
go ahead.
I just have a comment and a question for you. How, as an activist or somebody that researches these subjects, how do you go about differentiating between what is fact and often what is fiction in the sense of disinformation put out by an establishment or by certain individuals to mislead people that are investigating these crimes? How do you go about differentiating between the two?
Well, I mean, even preparing for talking with you tonight, I just did a web search, and so I come up with mainstream media like Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and even that's a main Post-Gazette in Pittsburgh. It even said, talked about that the Justice McCaffrey, I mentioned the 33-degree Mason, has the pathological symptoms of a sociopath. So if you look at mainstream media, you kind of see what truth they are putting out. And then you look at some of the alternative people, like, Wayne Madsen report.
Yep.
And Wayne Madsen was here some time ago when there was a protest on the steps of the Capitol of in Harrisburg, and he was with the Friends of Kathleen Kane. So he's a very, very excellent investigative journalist. He's pretty well respected in a lot of circles, so kind of hold up what he discovered and what he has to say about it, and then you just follow the story and make the connections, like the guy that Kevin just mentioned that was a the main prosecutor, what is it called, for the county. for Center County,
yep,
where Penn State's located.
Greg Reckart.
His strange death, and then the strange death of another person who was going to testify, the Monsignor in Philadelphia. Yeah, he was old and he was sick, but right before he's going to testify, it's a suspicious time to die. Mm-hmm. So you start kind of seeing patterns. You start seeing patterns, and like even with the enormous thing coming up that's being called Pizzagate, it connects the dots. And some of my Democratic or liberal friends just simply won't look at this. They don't want to believe any of it. And you don't have to believe, or some of it might be inaccurate. Maybe that pizza restaurant in Washington really, maybe that's a false story that got planted just to make the investigators into the pedophile rings make it look like it's all false. But then you got to move from,
The reality, too, is you just have to look at the history of an institution like the Catholic Church, and this is the norm of how they operate. I mean, they even knock off their own popes all the time on a routine basis. So it's not a stretch at all to realize that these things go on. And what's very significant about Kathleen Kane is she's been going through the same treatment that anybody like any prominent official, like Laurent Louis, a member of parliament in Belgium, started naming the names. He's gone through exactly the same thing, barred from parliament, facing charges, all the smear on the about him hating Jews, and like the mainstream smear going on him is exactly what they do with Kathleen Kane, where they try to humiliate the person and break them publicly. The main way you do that is by going after your kids, you know, and you know, so this fits the pattern, definitely.
It fits the pattern of a whistleblower too.
Yeah.
A few months ago, I was in Washington at a peace conference, and there were awards given, and John Kiriakou received an award. Now, he was a former CIA counterterrorism officer who was an investigator, senior investigator for Senate Foreign Relations Committee, sixth whistleblower indicted by the Obama administration. What did he do? He opposed the Bush administration's torture program, and he kind of slipped up and he named a name. He named a name on mainstream media, so they nailed him and put him in jail for a while. And then once you get, like, these networks of whistleblowers, that's where you also start seeing the pattern. And so, hence, John Kiriakou wrote this September 29th, 2016 article about Kathleen Kane because he was recognizing a similar pattern. So whether it's a pedophile ring or the lying and corruption around what's happening, getting us into all these wars, the perpetration of wars, perpetration of torture, you know, all these sordid things. You can kind of start connecting the dots because they all relate to the horrific abuse of power.
Right.
And a mentality that's absolutely psychopathic, that somehow at those high levels, there's like a gate, and if you're sufficiently psychopathic, you get through the gate and you get to wield more power.
Whereas
it's
if you show a conscience,
demonic or evil.
If you're like Kathleen
Kane,
what
we're up against to shine the light, huh?
If you're like Kathleen Kane and show that you have a conscience, you have to be made an example of. And this is exactly what they did with me or anybody else. They have a public trial and they humiliate you in public and destroy your credibility for good, so you'll never come back. And I want to ask you, where do things stand now with Kathleen Kane? She's not in jail, obviously. When does she go to jail? Like, what's happening with that?
I don't know the date, Kevin. I haven't been able to find. It's on appeal. That's $75,000 cash bail that she paid. I'm actually trying to find a way to track her down and see if I could even talk to her.
Right.
Or go meet with her. I will go drive wherever she is and meet with her with some other people who would like to do that as well.
Is she? Does she have a support group around her? Have people come forward publicly and supported her after what happened?
I've looked if there's anything called like Friends of Kathleen Kane.
Yep.
She herself said the problem was she did this without enough support. She didn't have an army. When she launched this against all the corruption, this corruption in Pennsylvania, if I can find it.
Well, it's time to build an army around her.
Statement was she didn't have the support for what she was up against. And here it is. I ran for this office because I thought there was a problem. My mistake was that I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad. And I didn't have enough support my army wasn't big enough.
Exactly. Well, it's time to build that army. If they can take out somebody like her, they can take out anybody, and that's the point of all this.
It is. I have a number now for the Pennsylvania Democratic Women's Committee, of which I'm a member of the Franklin County group, and I go regularly, trying to get them to really pay attention to this. So I'll put it on the agenda the next time we meet.
It'd be interesting to see the reaction. I mean, what's amazing about her, she got more votes than Obama did, and Obama carried Pennsylvania. So
that's
she'd have a lot
of popularity.
Yeah.
Yes, and had a lot of support, I mean, by the Governor Wolf, our current Governor Wolf, and then he and Rendell, the former governor. And as this stuff kept coming out, they kind of backpedaled on her.
Right, that's exactly.
You know, kind of abandoned her. Why? Because they let the McGaffrey judge. He was a Democrat. She was a whistleblower. She wasn't. First, they were saying she was a very partisan. The Republicans were accusing her of being partisan Democrat. And then when she started tripping up some Democrats, Democrats didn't like that either. It's like people are so still identity politics in the United States. Republicans are all right, Democrats are all wrong, and vice versa.
Exactly.
And we're going to have to start thinking beyond that two-party box. A lot of independents, they're growing.
Well, we've talked about this before. You know, we've talked about how it's like everything seems designed to be instigating civil war in America.
That's right. It does seem to be that. This has been a thing that we've seen in other countries in the past, well, I want to say several years, but I really want to say decades and decades, where you get the people fighting against each other, and then you can come in and take over. You have your type of people that you can control, then come in, control the banking system, the land, the resources. That's usually sort of the nexus of the control mechanisms.
Well,
and now a lot of this is turning back against the United States. I've just been reading the new confessions of the economic hitman.
Oh, yeah.
And as you know his work where he revealed all the warfare and the assassinations coming out of the attempts of the international banks to get countries in debt. And now what he's clearly seeing at this point is the same thing is happening in the United States, the same sort of tactics, and that divide and conquer and stir up people so emotionally against each other.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who would have, if Hillary would have won, the Trump people would have been in the streets. So it just keeps trying to look, it looks to me like they're trying to lead us into a bloody civil war in the United States. And,
well, who owns a big chunk of the U.S. debt? It's the Chinese. You know, you don't have to look too far, I think.
And apparently the Chinese was saying that they wanted to have the alternative media reined in the United States because of the Trump election and how Trump is. The other thing that's happening is who's being elected here and in other countries. The Brexit in England and maybe Marine Le Pen in France, some of these. People are wanting to be nationalists. They don't want these international rules, these international trade agreements. They don't want open borders.
Yep.
They want to have their sovereignty, and they want to have their money spent on getting their own problems solved in their own country. So that is a big appeal that people have had, Trump has had. But that's also why he's a threat, because he's not part of that in-crowd that was to go along with the new world order of a centralized global government controlled by a very few. I'm concerned about his picks, though. I mean, what he's going to do? He does seem to be putting all the billionaires in office. Some of them have questioned the status quo, though. Yeah.
Well, I had a more general question to ask you, and Ryan, again, if you have anything, just feel free. But what does this tell you? The Kathleen Kane case seems to be yet another example of somebody with a conscience trying to get inside the system, and there's no one higher than her. She was the top law official in Pennsylvania. She's getting taken down and humiliated like she doesn't have anything around her.
Right.
how easy it is to take people down, even when they've got the system's protection around them. So what does that say to you in terms of, you know, working through the system versus doing something else?
Well, I tend to think both and rather than either or, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
If you work, like, if when I ran for Congress, it wasn't with the thought that I had much of a chance to win, but the opportunity presented itself. I was asked to do that role, and I thought, well, I'll say yes, and I'll see what happens, and I'll see what kind of connections I can make, and the opportunities that I have to talk a bit at that kind of role for a while. So I think when you have an opportunity from inside, you should go for it.
Right.
And there may be places where from the inside, and I think particularly looking at, it's going to come down to the local level, strengthening local government, local power, local control, local economics. And the power really should flow from the local level up to the higher levels. In my book, it shouldn't be top down in the world. It should flow from a good, strong, based local economy that's a fair economy. At the local level, your public officials, you can go to their office easily. You can look them in the eye. You can get to know them.
Right.
The local level, you can do new kinds of economic networks. You can support organic farmers. You can find out who owns what land where, how much is it worth. You can do a lot on the local level with the freedoms that we have just as an individual person. Now, here's a great example. In Grant Township in Indiana County, Pennsylvania, just a small rural township with a few thousand, 7,000-8,000 people, they were going to have a deep frack wastewater well put in by a corporation. And they really rallied the citizenry against this. They brought in whatever lawyers they could. They brought in CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. They've been managing to push this back now for the past 3-4 years. One thing they did was get themselves elected as county commissioner. One of the activist women is now not county commissioner, the township supervisor. So she's now in the power position, township supervisor. The supervisors already were standing with the people, but they passed a local home rule charter that gives the local governance more power than a regular type of incorporation
really?
For the town. Their
sure.
first home rule charter, and then they passed the first ever in their home rule charter, they have a rights of nature. Now, Ecuador has a similar rights of nature in their constitution. That was a breakthrough. But this is the first in the United States to have a home rule charter that gives nature rights. In other words, they're water protectors also. They're saying we can't have this well because we could destroy our water quality, and they are all on wells, so it really could destroy their water quality. So
have they tested that in the courts yet? Has there been a case?
It hasn't been contested yet. It's in their home rule charter. This is kind of where it's really the power thing is really hitting now. It's right on the local level, fighting these particular battles. Then the third thing they did, they passed a law that said anybody that's doing nonviolent civil disobedience will not be fined or arrested.
Geez, let's move there. What's the name of this place?
It's in Indiana County, sort of in the central west part of Pennsylvania. It's in my District 9 where I ran for Congress. That's how I started meeting these people.
Oh, we should go interview some of these folks.
What?
We should interview these folks and do a program.
Yeah, Judy Wankism, and then her daughter, who's now a supervisor, and the CELDEF, Community and Environmental Legal Defense Fund. So they have everything they need in terms of local power against this corporation. That if this corporation moves on them or the state tries to move on them in collusion with the corporation, this will be another rallying cry, like come to Grant Township, like it was come to North Dakota.
Right, we'll get all those 5,000 folks down in Pennsylvania now.
And, yeah, this will be another place where we will rally. And
good.
The capacity to have 300 native tribes come together in Dakota and then so many thousands of other people. And then the other big thing was 2,000 veterans coming and actually apologizing. They apologized to the native people for the genocide that had happened in the
United States.
Here's the
thing, though. It's kind of like the good thing is we've got all this these people coming together at the grassroots, but ultimately, I mean, the pipeline is still going to go through. They'll make a deal, they'll pay their fine, and then they'll keep building the pipeline, just like the child rapists will keep trafficking kids, because these are
right,
big
money. Right, they see it as a cost of doing business.
Pardon me?
They see it as a cost of doing business.
Yes, they do.
Oh, the fine, yeah.
They're like, we pay the fine and keep going. But what the chief, Archambault, is that how you pronounce the Lakota chief's
mm-hmm.
name?
Yep.
He said some time ago when all these people were flooding there and 300 people from 300 tribes, he said, we've already won. What he meant was the coming together of the people, the strengthening of people, of we the people, the capacity of the courage of nonviolent civil disobedience, and to then bring in the media attention, yes, alternative media attention, but it was breaking through to mainstream media attention. He said, we've already won. And that is what will have us win these battles, is the people waking up and taking their stand.
Absolutely.
And just, is it interesting that just the day that the 2,000 veterans were arriving was when Obama announced, he announced, oh, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to permit this pipeline. And yes, you're right. It could be a lie. It could be manipulation. They would just pay the fine and keep going.
Well, that's
but he still had to respond.
Right. No, I get that. They always have a loophole. It's like when Union Carbide killed 3,000 people in India, they paid their fine and never did a day in jail. It's like Ryan says, part of their business that you just pay these fines. It doesn't stop the problem. It doesn't change the problem, but it creates, starts building a momentum that one day could stop it. Absolutely.
Well, look what you're doing with the common law courts.
Mm-hmm.
You're making the capacity for people to make a very clear case. Present all the evidence, just as you did with all the evidence of the genocide in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a mechanism to present all the evidence, and then it's a matter of the people siding with the people of the military, of the police, you know, of the people of goodwill coming together and standing up against the corruption.
That's
until
when revolutions
the
happen.
Right people get arrested, you know, until
exactly.
the criminals get arrested.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because in America, the county sheriffs are elected by the people, so we could get these county sheriffs performing arrests on known child raping priests, on these guys who evade justice, on anybody, right?
Absolutely true. That's right. That is a position that has local power, that has the potential to be really used for the people. And
right.
in fact, a friend of mine who's a chair of the Democratic Party in my county, her son ran for office, and now he's in that position.
Good.
Yeah.
Take back the nation.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, because we have our jurisdiction based on precincts, which is the most local level politically,
mm-hmm.
we got to start getting the Democratic and Republican people meeting, having public meetings in the precincts where they talk about these really big issues, or they're prepared to act on some basis of what's a crisis in their community. And they're now seeing to see themselves as the people responding to the corruption in the corporations or in the higher levels of government, and not being identified as primarily any particular political party. And it's easy to get all the names and addresses of the people in your whole precinct and to find a school or someplace to meet.
Well, you know,
would be real local organizing, huh?
I think the exciting thing about what happened around Bernie Sanders was that there was a third-party movement that for the first time in 100 years looked like it was coalescing in America, and it's still out there, but we need to cut across both party lines and bring people together on a new basis. And the same is true in Canada, too, where, of course, we don't have any of these Republican traditions, right, of common law and people's own, you know, electing sheriffs and that kind of thing. We have to create it new here, but it's the same story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other maybe helpful thing, if we can survive long enough, is the younger generations are more likely to be independent or third-party people.
Mm-hmm.
So the major parties in the United States, I think they're both losing power.
Yep.
But when I look at alternative media, I still see, even though they're aware of the corruption of the major parties, Kevin, I still see them, the alternative right is bashing the left and calling them lebtards, liberal retards. And the left bashes the right. So there has to be, a bird flies on two wings. That's my...
Right.
There
and the brain
wouldn't be a right and left if there wasn't some value in the right and the left. That's
and the brain operates from both spheres, the right and the left brain.
And the brain operates from right and left side of the brain. And so the polarity is that needs to be harmonized right. is the individual and society.
Yes.
Or is freedom, that's the right, and fairness, that's the left.
Right.
And so it's to have an economic system that understands property rights, what's yours, what's mine, what's ours, what do we share? And that's what my major life work is an economic system that says what is ours to share is what has been created by nature or by the creator, which is the land and resources and the water, everything that humans don't make. The rules have to fairly share those land and resources. That's ours. What's yours is what you work for. If you grow a garden, I shouldn't come and take your vegetables. That would be theft.
Nor should
mine
be taxed.
Is what I work for.
Nor should your income or what you make should be taxed either.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. So it's untaxed labor and production. The right likes that kind of thing. Then what you've got to collect for the public finance base for what's ours is what we is created by nature, land, water, resources. But then as humans draw upon those resources, there's a surplus value. And this is where it's really interesting. Karl Marx got onto this by the third book in Das Kapital. He talked about, it looks like the landowner is more the problem than the capitalist. The capitalist monopoly comes out of the previous land problem. So he called it surplus value accruing to land and resources. Adam Smith called it unearned income.
Right.
If it's income that an individual is receiving that they haven't earned, that is unearned. If it's not earned by that individual, then they see that this is called rent. It's economic rent. Thomas Paine talked about this. He said that every landowner owes to society a land rent for the land which he holds. Now,
do you want to give a little plug for Mr. For Mr. George? We've only got about 5 minutes left, but
okay. Well, I'll just finish this little piece. On the left, this looks like land reform, addressing the concentration of ownership of land and resources. But on the right, you can call it private property for all.
Right.
So this is where Henry George got us out of the box completely. He, in spending his time as a young man and growing up trying to understand wealth inequality in the United States, we're looking at the 1970s, 80s, and then he wrote his great work, Progress and Poverty. And he said, essentially, we must make land common property. He didn't mean you can't have private land tenure in terms of that piece of paper that says your private land use. But he meant we have to have the consciousness that that land is a common property.
Right.
So then he rediscovered a perennial wisdom teaching around land tenure and tax policy. And it traces back to where Thomas Paine was talking about, the French physiocrats who wanted to impose a land tax in before the French Revolution. Didn't happen. The revolution happened and the kings lost their heads. And then it goes back, another colleague found in research, thousands of years to a period in India when they had this form of public finance policy. And then you look at China. What you do, you can look through thousands of years and societies that really held the understanding and the policies to share the land and resources. They had fair economies. They had high cultures. They didn't have people in prison everywhere. They didn't have the kind of crime that we have. So
Lana, we've only got 2 minutes.
Great movement. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt because this is all really vital, and I actually want to carry on, and maybe we can come back in the future. We can find out more about those local folks in Pennsylvania and what they're doing, and you can have more of a platform to talk about all of this. But
that'd be great.
Any final comments or things you want to say to people about Kathleen Kane or anything we've talked about this hour?
Well, I want to thank you for having me on, and to everybody else. Essentially, we have to really keep connecting the dots. That's what's important here. We might have to take on individual cases, individual battles that we fight, but we always have to see that these are all connected to the corrupt use of power, and it spreads through so many, many areas. So to look at something like taxation policy and the pedophile problem might seem like a stretch, but there's ways to connect it in terms of the abuse of power.
Well, it's all about big money, too, and child trafficking is big money. Are you going to make an effort to get a hold of Kathleen? I'd love to have Kathleen Kane on the show.
Oh,
we're
going to
make an effort to do that.
I am. Let's do that. I mean, you know,
okay.
I have a couple of numbers, and I'll keep trying to see if I can get a hold of her. I'm very interested in a connection with her directly, Kevin. Yeah, definitely.
Ryan, any final comments or questions to Alana? Hello, Ryan.
I believe that everything that needed to be said this evening was said, and I think that I'll reserve the right to be silent. Sometimes that's the best form of opinion.
Oh, fine. So, Alana, we want to thank you once again for coming on. As always, you carry it on, and we'll talk to you real soon about this. And,
okay,
and
you're welcome.
Hopefully having Kathleen.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot, Alana.
You're welcome. Good night.
Bye-bye, Alana.
Bye. Talk to you real soon. And that was Alana Hartsock from South Central Pennsylvania. For you folks who want to get a hold of Alana or maybe in the area, write to us, Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com, and we will definitely connect you up. Also, there's, like I mentioned earlier in the show, over the next couple of weeks, we've had a number of requests to do a rehash of the year, the top kind of stories of 2016, the books we published this year, which are all very important resources, which we'll go into. So we'll do that over the next couple of weeks as well. Remember Maisie Shaw on December 25th, who was murdered. Her story breaking in news is really what opened up the whole residential school genocide crime over 20 years ago. So we're going to do that. And Ryan, any other thoughts or things you want to mention coming up?
Nope, I have a radio show this evening myself, live at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to be discussing this topic as well as what has been considered to be fake news. But I'm going to go into a history of fake news and psychological operations aimed to deter people away from what is considered truth. You can listen tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Best way to find that information is by going to my website, www.thesecretteaching.info. You can find ways to contact me, past and present and future shows, as ways to listen. Thank you, Kevin. And tonight was a very excellent show. People need to do their own investigation, though, and not just listen to shows like this and think that they've done their due diligence.
Okay, and one other point I wanted to flag for people, too, is something that came up kind of tangentially tonight, but which is very important, is the patterns when public officials like her can be taken down so quickly and easily. It's coming from a powerful source. And one of the things I want to flag on that, since it does fit the pattern, is the activity of a group called the Holy Alliance, which is the Vatican Espionage Service. It's actually the agency that killed Pope John Paul I in 1978 when he was uncovering the mob connection to the Vatican Bank. It operates in the United States very extensively. In fact, when you look at the history of the Holy Alliance, it was established by Pius V in the late 16th century to try to assassinate Queen Elizabeth, who was seen as the, you know, kind of the thorn in the side of the Vatican in Europe at the time. And so this has a long history, and the way they operate and everything, we're going to be doing more research on that and show how they operate in a situation where Kathleen Kane was showing we're about to open the lid on how this crimen solicitanus policy operates up close. And they prevented that from happening by getting rid of her, but it's coming from that source in Rome as one of the major sources. And we're going to explore that in more detail in the future. Also, just a final message to people you can't understand this work in a 3-minute soundbite. You've got to do your research. In terms of this whole religious aspect of genocide, we've documented very thoroughly in our books, especially murderbydecree.com. That's Murder by Decree, the Crime of Genocide in Canada, filled with a lot of documents and other materials. So please go to that online. You can order our books at amazon.com, Unrelenting, Murder by Decree, and Truth Teller Shield, a manual for whistleblowers. And also, as I mentioned, this week we're publishing a fourth book, History of White People in Canada. It's kind of like a comical satire piece on my people, the Canadian, Euro-Canadians, and where we came from and where we're going. So we'll have a message about that. You can see this week at itccs.org. We'll have a notice about that. So on behalf of Ryan and all the other loyal members here, I want to thank you all for tuning in, and tune in next week as well. Please make this a regular habit, and those groups of you out there who are listening in, decide how you want to act on these ideas and inspirations that you've received here in the show. Please write to us, republicofkanata@gmail.com, and we can connect you up with our wider movement. So until next week, I want to thank you all again. And until next week, be strong and stay clear. Thank you, brothers and sisters.
All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's got its complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker.